Attention listeners, mark your calendars for Colorado Gives Day on December 10th. Support AfterSight and give to the causes you care about. Go to coloradogivesday.org/organizations/AfterSight between now and December 10th to make your donation.
Thank you for joining us for Colorado Gardener, read by Christy McGowan. Featuring articles from Better Homes and Gardens and Green Prints. 10 Best Potato Companion Plants to Keep Pests Away. Choosing the right companion plants to grow with your potatoes is an all-natural way to keep your plants pest-free. By Lauren Landers. And this is from BetterHomesAndGardens.com. Choosing the right potato companion plants can help protect your crop from common pests, such as the Colorado potato beetle, aphids, and cutworms. Several herbs, vegetables, and flowering plants can help keep your tubers growing strong and pest-free without resorting to toxic pesticides. Below, you'll find some of the best potato companion plants, along with essential tips for maximizing your potato harvest with the help of these plants. 1. Sweet alyssum. Sweet alyssum is a low-growing, flowering, pretty annual, known for its petite white and purple flowers. It's also one of the best potato companion plants. Alyssum blooms attract beneficial insects, including hoverflies and ladybugs, which can help keep unwanted potato pests in check. When used as a ground cover, alyssum also helps lock in soil moisture and prevent weeds, which will help your potatoes grow larger and more vigorous. 2. Cabbage family members. Broccoli, cauliflower, kale, and other related plants have short root systems that won't compete with your potatoes for valuable soil space. Pairing these two types of plants together will help you get the most out of your garden beds. Just keep in mind that these plants are heavy feeders, so they should be fertilized regularly with a well-balanced fertilizer to ensure your veggies get all the nutrients they need. 3. Horseradish. Horseradish isn't as commonly grown among backyard gardeners as some other vegetables, but it makes a fine condiment and an even better potato companion plant. Its large, oversized leaves help shield the soil around your potatoes, preventing weeds and conserving soil moisture. What's more, horseradish appears to repel the destructive Colorado potato beetle and may boost potatoes' natural ability to resist disease. However, it can spread aggressively, so it's best to plant horseradish where you can keep it contained. 4. Alliums. Chives, leeks, onions, and other alliums are some of the best plants to grow for natural pest control. Their pungent aroma repels many garden pests, including aphids and beetles. Once it's time to harvest, you'll be even happier you added these as potato companion plants, as you'll have all the ingredients for a mouth-watering potato and leek soup. 5. Cilantro. Cilantro makes an excellent potato companion plant, especially when allowed to flower. In bloom, this plant attracts hoverflies, lacewings, ladybugs, and parasitic wasps to your garden. These insects, in turn, prey on common potato pests, including Colorado potato beetle and aphids. 6. Nasturtium. Nasturtium is an attractive plant generally grown for its looks or harvested for its edible flowers and peppery-tasting leaves. But nasturtium is also a prime potato companion plant for natural pest control, as it helps keep several troublesome insects in check. Nasturtiums often act as trap crops, luring pests like aphids and Colorado potato beetles away from potatoes so they are easier to contain and eliminate. 7. Beans and peas. Beans and peas won't compete with your potatoes for garden space or nutrients, so you won't need to worry about these plants stunting your potato harvest. But more than that, legumes' natural nitrogen-fixing ability provides valuable nutrients to the soil. Legumes can help you grow lusher and more abundant plants when planted with your potatoes. Beyond this, beans can also repel Colorado potato beetles. In return, potatoes keep Mexican bean beetles away, which can otherwise devastate your bean plants. 8. Sage. Sage is an aromatic herb, ideal for attracting bees and other pollinators to your garden. Its strong scent is also well known as a deterrent for flea beetles and other common pests. And if you needed more reasons to grow sage with your potatoes, sage and potato gnocchi are hard to beat on a cozy night in. 9. Lettuce. Potatoes can take months to mature in the garden, using valuable garden space. However, if you pair your slow-growing potatoes with faster-growing plants like lettuce and other leafy greens, you can get much more food out of your vegetable garden. Adding lettuce as a potato companion plant is a smart way to use your garden space, and undemanding lettuce won't compete with potatoes for nutrients either. 10. Marigolds. Keeping marigolds in your organic garden is one of the best ways to prevent pests naturally. Marigold scent is naturally repellent to many common pests, including Colorado potato beetles. Sowing marigolds among your tubers will help keep your plants naturally pest-free. Plus, the marigold flowers will provide some bright color to liven up your garden beds. Frequently asked questions. Can potatoes be grown from potatoes bought at the store? Potato plants need to be started with seed potatoes, which, unlike potatoes at the grocery store, aren't treated with sprout inhibitors. For successful potato plants, there needs to be at least one eye or bud. What kind of soil do potato plants like? Potatoes like slightly acidic soil, 5.8 to 6.5 pH. Fertilizer or composted manure are two good additions to soil for potato plants. How do I grow large potatoes? The secret to getting big potatoes is nitrogen in the soil. Amend the soil with a nitrogen-rich supplement during leaf formation to encourage larger and more abundant yields. Hummingbirds at tea time. A tiny bird helps a British native finally feel a little bit American. By Diana Wells. And this is from Green Prints, September 2024 edition. Being English and a gardener has certain drawbacks, especially if one is tall and thinnish and wears a sun hat and skirt rather than a baseball cap and shorts. People expect an expertise I cannot live up to. It is no good explaining that the sun on my neck bothers me, that I no longer have cuisse de nymphe, and if I cannot be pruned, I had better be covered, and that my British accent is more a matter of habit than horticultural intelligence. I am still expected to know all about perennials, to murmur about Phaistostegia as I pull on my wash leather gloves, to pour afternoon tea under the liquid amber, and to trudge puckily out to the galanthus in the snow. People are always asking me the names of flowers or what they should plant in their borders. The truth is that Vita Sackville West, while contributing immeasurably to gardening and garden writing for all time, is a bit hard for ordinary English ladies to live up to. Yet, what American does not immediately think of Vita when she or he meets an English garden lady? Any American gardener who goes to England will almost certainly visit Sissinghurst. The gardens there are very beautiful, and I have visited them myself. Most people who go there come back full of zeal to make a one-color garden, usually a white garden. I was no exception. Cool underplantings of Artemisias, Santolinas, and Archilias, white delphinium, white foxgloves, tree peonies, white campanulas, and what Vita calls dozens of white regale lily, grown from seed, filled my thoughts. I had visions of such a garden by moonlight, with great hawk moths hovering over the moonflowers, with subdued lights slanting across the darkening lawn, with muted but brilliant conversation wafting through the heavy scent of tuberoses, the Matthiola, the Nicotiana, and the Zaluzinskaya. All this would be preceded by a dinner of chicken breasts, poached in white wine, blanched endive, and meringues. My dress for the occasion would be... It is always good to remember that Vita Sackville West, though a relentless gardener, had several people about the place to help her implement her visions. It is so with most of the great gardens of the world. So for us, inspiration must be tempered with reality, and sometimes that has a way of changing things more than we expected. I did not think, when it actually came to planting, that I would have a wholly white garden. This is because, before I had started on the venture, I had been seduced by a mail order company into buying three incredible roses for the price of one. An absolutely, as they informed me, and I agreed, irresistible offer. The roses were white, pink, and something called French lace, evoking images of a dreamy night in Paris. All white, I then decided, would be stark, but I would aim for pastels, pale pinks and blues, blushes and sunsets. My American mother-in-law, to whom I confided my plan, said she always liked to show herself, but not surprisingly, that did not discourage me in the least. Gardening, for some reason, has always been slightly intertwined with morality, at least in the Western world. Adam, we are told, named everything in his garden, but then got in trouble when his wife wanted a more encyclopedic knowledge. And ever since then, gardens, in Western thought, were judged as expositions of right thinking. The Eastern gardens, in contrast, had nothing of this. They were shamelessly built as centers of love and pleasure. In the West, the tradition of not only particularly liking a certain kind of garden, but actually thinking of it as wrong, is still with us. Francis Bacon scathingly dismissed a type of gardening he disliked, topiary, as for children. In the time of Rousseau, the trend to natural gardens reflected the politics of the time. Olmsted's American parks were a manifestation of democratic thought. Even nowadays, If we do not like a gardening style, we are apt to condemn the very soul of its creator. English gardens, as with English manners, are supposed to be impeccably tasteful. The current epitome of such taste is the one-color garden. Yet, as you will have guessed, I no longer have a bed of muted pastels, reminiscent of French lingerie. And the reasons are many. The first is the Oriental poppies. I obtained them from the White Flower Farm Nursery. Two poppies called Marshall Vondergoltz and Showgirl. The first was white. The second, bewitching pink. The combination, had it worked, would certainly have been reminiscent of Paris, and those delicious war stories of heart-rending ties between Teutonic generals and French showgirls. But poppies, like people, have a way of reverting to type, and the glorious scarlet bastards that soon populated my pastels were no exception. As everyone knows, you cannot move poppies. So there we were. Of course, by mid-June, we could have been pastel again if it hadn't been for the hummingbirds. Someone gave me some lovely red monarda, which I planted in a bed a little further away from the house. The hummingbirds worked it ceaselessly, but I wanted to have them near the porch. I thought of luring them with red sugar water in a little kit the catalogs informed me would keep them by me always. I even bought the little kit, but then forgot to fill it with the red sugar. And meanwhile, the monarda had not forgotten to bloom, and the hummingbirds were always out of sight. I tried some white monarda called Snow Queen, which was about as attractive to hummingbirds as one could expect a plant of that name to be. Then, one day, I simply took a shovelful of the lovely red monarda, plunked it right in the middle of the pastels, and settled down to watch the magical little birds fight over it. After that, vulgarity took over, for hummingbirds, like my mother-in-law, love showy flowers. They work magenta foxgloves with enthusiasm. They love cardinal flowers. They love trumpet vine. Bright red climbing beans look well, I discovered, next to pale mauve clematis, as long as there are hummingbirds zooming in on the resulting combination. The final capitulation was salvia, fiery red salvia, the kind you see in parks and banks, and never in pastel English gardens. And just to show that democracy has won the day, I have planted bronze-leaved dahlias with pink, yes, pink, chrysanthemums next to them. I am finally freed from Sissinghurst, and I finally feel a little bit American. Tea time now includes hummingbirds. I confess I have not yet taken to American iced tea, and want my hot cuppa with milk and biscuits, cookies. But I feel my garden, in its glorious and brass vulgarity, is making a statement. It is affirming that I am part of a nation that does not believe in all-white anything, even a garden. I have managed, like everyone else, to make my garden a manifestation of my morality, a mix of old and new. Anything that will best flourish there, and with nothing excluded because it is the wrong color. I am as complacent as I used to be when I had good taste, because morality is still on my side, as it always is when people take up a new gardening idea. For gardening is the recreation of our own little worlds, where we have our own rules, and dissenters are derided. When I walk in the garden in the cool of the evening, I do not see great hawk moths, smell the heavy nicotiana, or, I am afraid, hear voices other than my mother-in-law's television news through the window. I will not have dined on breast of chicken and white wine. French lace was eaten by Japanese beetles, and Paris, well, Paris is far away. But hummingbirds hover fearlessly right next to my chair, and every year they come from more miles away than my imagination can take me, to the glories of my salvia, my trumpet vine, and my bee balm. Squash, the powerhouse of flavor and nutrition. Who knew squash was so loaded with benefits? By Bill Duggan. And this is from Greenprints, September 2024 edition. When we think about squash, our minds often drift to the comforting warmth of autumnal soups and hearty casseroles. While pumpkins usually steal the spotlight during the fall season, there's a whole world of other squash varieties that offer unique flavors, textures, and health benefits. Squash is a fascinating family of vegetables that deserve our attention. Squash includes a wide diversity of flavor profiles and culinary uses. Unlike the straightforward sweetness of pumpkins, squash, such as acorn and spaghetti, bring more complex tastes and textures to the table. Butternut squash, for instance, is known for its rich, nutty flavor and creamy texture, making it a favorite for purees and roasted dishes. Its vibrant orange flesh is not just pleasing to the eye, but also packed with nutrients like beta-carotene and fiber. Acorn squash, on the other hand, is celebrated for its mild, slightly sweet taste and tender, golden flesh. It has a subtle flavor that's a cross between hazelnut and corn, with a hint of sweetness. This versatility makes acorn squash an excellent complement to both savory and sweet dishes, from stuffing to baking, with a drizzle of maple syrup. Another fascinating squash is the spaghetti squash, which, when cooked, transforms into spaghetti-like strands that are a healthy and low-carb alternative to pasta. Originating from the Americas, spaghetti squash is known for its mild taste and slightly crunchy texture. This squash delivers a unique dining experience and is a delightful treat for those seeking to add more vegetables to their diet without sacrificing the joy of their favorite pasta dishes. The world of squash is a symphony of flavors and textures waiting to be explored. Each variety brings something unique to the table. So, next time you're at the market, venture beyond the familiar pumpkin and discover the delightful diversity that other squashes have to offer. Your taste buds will thank you. And squashes don't just taste good, they're good for you. They're versatile and packed with nutrients that can keep you healthy, improve digestion, and support a strong immune system. Squash is nature's nutritious treat, providing both delicious flavor and valuable health benefits. Rich in vitamins and antioxidants, squash can protect your heart, boost your immune system, lower your blood pressure, and even aid in weight management. The vitamin A in squash helps improve vision and skin health, while the high fiber content supports a healthy digestive system and helps control blood sugar levels. Your body will benefit from incorporating these nutrient-dense vegetables into your daily meals. The squash is one powerful vegetable. Thank you for joining us for Colorado Gardener. My name is Christy McGowan.